Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Twitter at Mike Golic Jr. at ChrisCanty99. And Gojo, today was the introductory press conference for Giants' new general manager, Joe Shane. And it's a day that a lot of Giants fans have met with a lot of optimism because, quite frankly, Joe Shane can't be any worse than Dave Gettleman. Dave Gettleman has been the general manager for the New York Giants for 4.5 years since the end of 2017. And in his 4 full seasons, he's had a record of 19-46. So Joe Shane in this tenure has got to be better than Dave Gettleman. And so a lot of Giants fans are excited about that. But Joe Shane is going to be met with the immediate task of trying to find a head coach. And we all know that that process is ongoing. But one of the other big decisions that Joe Shane is going to have to make is what happens to the future of quarterback Daniel Jones.
Yeah, and that's kind of where the crux of today has been. You've probably seen, if you've been online at all, quotes circulating about Daniel Jones and what his relationship has been like with this team. You heard Christine Lisi say it in the SportsCenter update there. John Mara said, "We have done everything possible to screw this kid up." Meaning, Chris, that we know how difficult it is coming into this league. We've seen a ton of quarterbacks undone by going through coordinator after coordinator, different coaches in their first few years. That's supposed to be the foundation. That's supposed to be where you get used to speaking that language at the professional level that you need to operate the huddle. And for Daniel Jones, who, listen, I thought was overdrafted at the spot that he was taken at 6th overall, still there's a ton of ability there that right now has just been giving very little ground. And then you add in the injury to go along with it to be able to actually grow into a functioning quarterback.
No doubt, but you are talking about an organization that has had 5 double-digit loss seasons in a row. And then you're talking about 7 of the last 8 being double-digit loss seasons. So it's clear that there are some things foundationally that are wrong with this team and that Joe Shane is going to be responsible to cleaning all those things up. But Joe Shane also made it abundantly clear today that he doesn't believe in a rebuild. Here's Joe Shane on the prospects of tearing this thing down.
Chris,
that
I understand.
That sounds good. That sounds good,
Coach. That's what you're supposed to say, right? Like, that's the only thing that you can really say in that spot as you're getting to know everyone right now. Like, he's still getting used to his key card working around the building, Chris. So I'm not going to fault him too much for the coach speak, but I think we all know, if we're honest, this Giants roster was supposed to be at a different place this season, and it underperformed to that level. The defense that was supposed to be better than it was underperformed, and all those offensive skill weapons did not get to bear fruit because the quarterback and the group blocking for him were too inconsistent this year.
Yeah, and their offense has been really bad, like amongst the worst in the National Football League over the last several seasons, essentially since Daniel Jones has been under center for him, and so that's going to have to be a priority for Joe Shane in terms of trying to get the best out of what Daniel Jones has to offer. Now, we don't know what that will be, and we don't know if that'll result in the Giants feeling like they need to commit to Daniel Jones long-term as their franchise guy, but that's a part of the decision-making process this offseason, too. We're not going to see any more games before Joe Shane has to decide on Daniel Jones' 5th-year option. That's a commitment that he's going to have to make, and you're talking about a quarterback that has missed time in each of his first 3 seasons, so there's going to be a lot of pressure on the evaluation, what Joe Shane sees on tape from Daniel Jones, what he thinks he can get out of him. I know that they'll also be influenced by their salary cap situation, keeping in mind that that's the 5th worst of any team's salary cap in the National Football League going into this offseason. So there's a high degree of difficulty when it comes to cleaning up some of the issues that they have from a talent standpoint with this roster. And in the middle of it, you have Daniel Jones, a foundational piece that John Mara clearly would like to see stick around.
Yeah, Chris, that's what I want to get to here. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, because Joe Shane's going to come in and say all the right things right now. He's the new guy. John Mara has been the name around here. He's been part of one of the most famous families in football for a while at the head of this organization. And I want to read you the entirety of that quote that we heard referenced in the SportsCenter update here, because I heard this and actually felt hopeful that the Giants were going to approach this the right way, the way they have so far in this process in choosing a GM who's going to choose their head coach and go on from here. This is the quote from John Mara, the New York Giants owner. He said, "I want Joe Shane, the GM, and the new head coach to make that evaluation about Daniel Jones. We do feel Daniel can play. We've done everything possible to screw this kid up since he's been here. We've keep bringing changing coaches, keep changing offensive coordinators, keep changing offensive line coaches. I take a lot of responsibility for that. But let's bring in the rough group of coaches now and give him enough continuity to try and build the offensive line and then be able to make an intelligent evaluation of whether he can be the franchise quarterback or not. I have a lot of hope for Daniel. I know how badly he wants it. I know how the players feel about him. We are certainly not giving up on him by any stretch of the imagination. Chris, to me, the first part of that matters a lot more than the flowery stuff at the end. Him saying, I want Joe and the new head coach to make the evaluation about Daniel Jones.
Yeah, and I can understand that. You want to be a functional organization, and around the NFL, teams that have sustained success, the owners allow the general manager and the head coach the autonomy to make football decisions. I believe in that. Allow your football people to make football decisions. But in the middle of this whole Giants situation, there's been a figure in Chris Mara that has been involved in the front office when it comes to player personnel. And so I can't help but feel like there's still some level of influence that Chris Mara is going to have when it comes to decisions on the futures of Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. And so that's the piece that I'm wondering, how much leash does Joe Shane actually really have when it comes to making a decision to potentially have to move on from one of the two players that I just mentioned? I don't know that that's going to be the reality of it. In a perfect world, it would be, but it seems like the Mara family is insistent on giving those guys every opportunity to prove that they deserve to be a part of the long-term plan for the program. I'm just not sure that either one of those guys have shown us enough in the way of productivity to justify that confidence that ownership has in them.
Chris, let me lay it out in this way then for the plan around Daniel Jones, because we know Saquon Barkley is going to be a decision that gets made going forward in the immediate future, the former number two overall pick. But for the quarterback and Daniel Jones, you've still got him on the rookie deal here. You mentioned maybe the staff says, hey, we can still get a look at him, but bring in competition. A lot of people are looking and taking Joe Shane, who comes from that Buffalo Bills tree with Brandon Bean, and saying a natural head coaching candidate, a guy who we've seen interview there a couple of times, in Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator for the Bills, would be in that mix. How would this sit with you? You've got Daniel Jones on the roster. Brian Daboll and Joe Shane come over here, and they try and bring Mitch Trubisky with him, who backed up Josh Allen for this past year, the former Bears quarterback, who came in, and we know, limited sample size in preseason and looked like he had improved some in that offense. Would that be enough of a caliber of veteran for you to feel comfortable about the competition on that roster at quarterback?
No, because Mitch Trubisky is a peer of Daniel Jones. Mitch Trubisky is the 2017 draft. Daniel Jones got drafted in 2019. I don't know that that's the direction that they need to go. I think you need somebody that's a little more seasoned. I like the idea of a Jimmy Garoppolo type coming in here. You've got some other prospective quarterbacks in free agency that'll be available. Maybe Marcus Mariota. We'll see what ends up happening with all of that. But I think you need to have somebody in the quarterback room that can not only compete with Daniel Jones, but that can also teach Daniel Jones about what it means to be a quarterback in the National Football League. I really don't think he's had that, Gojo. I mean, you could go back to a couple of years ago when Colt McCoy was in the room, and I thought that was a pretty good fit, and it just so happens to turn out that Colt McCoy was thrust into duty, and the Giants went on the road and beat the Seattle Seahawks, who would be a playoff team. So I look at this as being able to bring somebody that can help Daniel Jones learn how to play quarterback in this league, and more importantly, how to be consistent. I think he's trying to get past some of the turnover woes from his first couple of years, but you're still talking about a guy through three seasons that's got 50 total touchdowns to 49 total turnovers. That's not exactly what you're looking for. So there's got to be a lot of show and prove when it comes to Daniel Jones, and I, for one, am not somebody that thinks that he needs to have some huge commitment from the organization. I would not exercise his fifth-year option. I would make this somewhat of a prove-it year and allow him to go in and compete for the starting job in training camp. If he wins it, great. And he proves it, you can sign him to an extension in the offseason or franchise tag him. If he doesn't, then you've got the opportunity to have a clean break in 2023. I think that should be the approach. But from everything that we're hearing from everyone within the organization, including new GM Joe Shane, it sounds like they're going to try to build this thing out around Daniel Jones this offseason and then see what happens in 2022.
try and build a fertile ground for any quarterback and then see what happens beyond this season here. Could be the plan. So Joe Shane making his first introductions as the new GM of the New York Giants. Coming up next, though, let's stick with leadership in the quarterback room. How valuable could it potentially be for a former number one overall pick to have someone who stood in his exact shoes at the helm for his team next year? That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. And what Urban Meyer did down in Jacksonville, Gojo, he should be locked up and nobody should let him out when it comes to coaching. I hope nobody allows him anywhere near their program moving forward. But that does make us think about what Jacksonville is going through right now, because they're in the middle of a coaching search as well. They're one of the nine vacancies around the National Football League, and we're getting mixed reports out of Jacksonville. According to Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times and friend of Canty and Golic Jr., the Jags are attempting to finalize a contract with Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but then we also saw a conflicting report from our very own Adam Schefter that says that the Jacksonville Jaguars continue talks with Leftwich and Colts defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus, and that the Jaguars are not close to a deal with anyone at this time. So I just want to spin this thing forward, and let's play the what-if game. If Byron Leftwich does land the plane and ends up being a head coach in Jacksonville, how do you like that fit, and how does that impact Trevor Lawrence moving forward?
I think I like it in as much as we can know anything about guys that are going to be first-time head coaches. Chris, we see this play out, I think, a lot more on the college level of people going back to programs that they were familiar with right now. At my alma mater, Tommy Reese, who is my teammate's the current offensive coordinator, he's helped shepherd a couple of really successful quarterbacks through because he understands exactly what they've gone through here. Byron Leftwich was the 7th overall pick for this Jacksonville franchise many moons ago. He knows what it's like to be looked at as the dude at top of that and how to navigate a lot of what comes with that. And I thought one of the biggest missteps of this last year was for Trevor Lawrence. Once again, kind of like at Clemson, he was asked to have to come out here and lead in ways and answer questions about the organization and about his coach that were well ahead of his years, and he answered the bell. But to have someone now who understands what needs to go on in that room at this level, at the NFL level, who's been in his shoes at this organization, and who comes from an offense where he got to learn under Bruce Arians and multiple stops, who's been one of the better offensive minds in the NFL for a while, and alongside Tom Brady, the GOAT, it just feels like someone who really understands what this position necessitates from you as a leader at the franchise level, but also just where the game's at now for quarterbacks in modern football. It feels really healthy for Trevor from that standpoint.
Yeah, and that's what this hire has to be about. I mean, Jacksonville has to do right by Trevor Lawrence. They got to make their next move their best move when it comes to the head coaching hire. And it feels like with Byron Leftwich, getting the seasoning from Bruce Arians and from being around all the coordinators, all the assistant coaches on that Bucs staff, and then having the opportunity to win at the highest levels of the sport, that's going to prepare him for being able to resurrect the Jacksonville Jaguars program. And Gojo, I'm always a fan of being able to hire people in your coaching staff that have a vested interest in the organization. Leftwich has blood in the ground with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was, once upon a time, their first-round pick, and he was supposed to be the franchise quarterback. So I like the idea of being able to bring him in and work with Trevor. You know that Tom Brady has taught to him some things in terms of, you know, offensive concepts that work in today's NFL. So I'm excited about what that marriage can be. But I'm also excited that we're starting to see more minority head coaching candidates get looks with these franchises. And the fact that Leftwich is a finalist for this job, I think it speaks volumes. Because we talked about it at the end of the regular season with all the firings that happened. We only had one black head coach in Mike Tomlin that was in the National Football League. When I came in the league in 2005, there were a total of 6. So we're hustling backwards when it comes to trying to make progress and find more people of color and put them in decision-making positions. So I got to give a shout-out in all of this to Bruce Arians. I mean, the fact that he assembled the staff that he did in Tampa, having all black coordinators, and then having 2 women as assistant coaches on his staff, like being able to create that kind of environment, that kind of culture that can foster the development of these individuals in order to make them candidates for positions at the top of these organizations, I think the NFL has to continue to encourage those types of decisions, those types of hires in coaching staffs and in front offices. And so I think that this is just another one of those steps that needs to be made. If Byron Leftwich does get the job with the Jacksonville Jaguars, the compensatory pick is going to the Tampa Bay Bucks because they did create an environment. One of their coordinators actually got a head coaching job.
Yeah, I'd say that compensatory pick, for anyone who forgets that, if you've got someone, a coach or a front office member who's a part of the organization for at least 2 years that ends up getting a GM or a head coaching job in another organization, you're awarded, I believe, is what, 2 years of compensatory picks at the third round level?
For the general manager, it's two, and I think for the coach, it's one.
Yeah, but what you talked about, the environment matters in all this, right? Because what we had with BA was someone who said, yeah, this is normal. This is a winning organization that's going to do it at a high level where this kind of diversity is just normal. These are highly qualified people at their positions who have come in and been able to help. And so you've seen that happens there because it matters to Bruce Arians here. You look at what we talked about with Kwesi Adofo-Mensah getting hired by the Vikings here as a part of Andrew Berry's staff for the Cleveland Browns that's been highly successful in the way they've built and put together teams. Like, all of this is having a really positive trickle-down effect because all of these perspectives make everyone better in this process. That's been a great part about this offseason, because you're right, Chris. We've seen a ton of minority candidates, deserving ones, getting the looks that they richly deserve in all this. I do want to look for a second, though, Chris, at the team that Byron Leftwich would be leaving, because we talked about that environment there in Tampa. How much do you think that affects Tom Brady going forward? Because we could be talking about this with Todd Bowles, their defensive coordinator also.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting part in all of this, right? Because now Tom Brady would have to presumptively work with a new coordinator. Now, there's been rumors that BA has considered taking over play calling duties. So we'll see how that marriage would potentially work. Because remember, when Tom Brady came over, it didn't necessarily work in terms of them being able to blend their philosophies on offense and what the system should actually be. And then I think after their bye week in that first year down in Tampa together, like, Bruce Arians turned over the keys and the reins to Byron Leftwich and Tom Brady, and they did more of the things that Tom Brady did in New England, and they had overwhelming success. So it'd be interesting, with Leftwich being out of the equation, does that equal a marriage that Tom Brady would be interested in with Bruce Arians, not only as the head coach, but as the play caller and the offensive coordinator going into 2022? Is that something that he's comfortable with? That's a question that has to be answered, and I think that does have an impact on whether or not he decides that he's going to come back for 2022. So, really interesting layer to this conversation with Byron Leftwich potentially being hired as a head coach, how that impacts Tampa and what they do at offensive coordinator.
I'm glad you mentioned Byron's willingness to kind of meet Tom halfway in the offense and help implement some of that stuff, because I think that's going to be huge going to Jacksonville. Byron comes from a program that was running a lot of pro style, old school pro style, downhill, thick gap runs under center. I'll be interested to see if he marries some of the spread stuff that Trevor ran so well at Clemson. We've seen the trend. Meet your quarterbacks halfway and have success. We'll wait and see if that's what Byron Leftwich and Trevor Lawrence, as a lot of the reports are indicating for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But coming up next, let's check in with some more teams that are now heading into the offseason mode. We'll check the state of the franchise for the Bills and Titans in the AFC. Where do they go after this postseason exit from the past weekend? We'll get to that after this word from Body Armor Light. All right, guys, Body Armor Light, let it help you achieve your fitness goals this year. It's the low-calorie sports drink that's hydrating your active lifestyle. Body Armor Light has no artificial sweeteners, no sugar added, and only 20 calories per 16-ounce bottle. Athletes like Mike Trout, Sabrina Ionescu, Dustin Johnson all use Body Armor Light to stay hydrated. So why not give it a try? My brother just landed in town. The first thing he did was look for the fridge, begging whichever God will listen that it was filled with Body Armor Light. So from now until April 30th, try and get like him. And when you buy $20 of any Body Armor product, you can earn $10 in fitness cash towards select fitness retailers nationwide. At the rate my brother has consumed this, he may own several fitness retailers nationwide. Learn more at bacommittofit.com. That's bacommittofit.com. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Get at us on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, the divisional round has left us with a little bit of shrapnel, a little bit of fallout, because we got to look at the teams that are on the losing side of it. We'll devote the back half of the week to the winning side of it, right? Like the winners, yeah. We talk about the conference championship weekend. We'll reserve those two shows to talk about them. But we also got to talk about the losers in this thing. And then diving in a little bit closer on the AFC side of the bracket, we got to look at what's going on with the state of the Buffalo Bills and the Tennessee Titans. Now, the Bills seem like they're a lot closer to the Kansas City Chiefs and being able to compete at a championship level. But if you're the Tennessee Titans, you came into this thing as the number one seed in the playoffs, and you got bounced by the upstart Cincinnati Bengals in Joe Burrow, and the guy that you paid $100 million to in a contract extension a couple of years ago in Ryan Tannehill was a big reason why you ended up losing that game. So if we're going to go through the offseason checklist for Tennessee, what has to be the priorities for that team to get back to the playoffs and compete at a high level?
Well, I think the number one realistic priority, because we will get to the staggering numbers attached to Ryan Tannehill still in a Titans uniform in just a second. But, Chris, the priority in all this seems to be for a team that we've always said, built in the image of their coach, Mike Vrabel, former outside linebacker for the Patriots here, Harold Landry. He's going to be a free agent. He had 12 sacks for you this year. He's one of your guys drafted and developed in that uniform. Chris, you got to find a way to make sure you reward that, keep him around here, because I have a feeling in the interim, that defensive front that we saw, Jeffrey Simmons is going to get talked about sooner rather than later for extending him as well. You're going to have to keep that band together until you can figure out what you're going to do at quarterback, because I don't think injury is going to become any less a part of the Derrick Henry story going forward with the workload that they ask of that dude.
Yeah, and that's what I was starting to wonder, whether or not the hits that we've seen on Derrick Henry in the first 5 years of his career is starting to take a toll, because when running backs start getting nicked up, they generally don't have those seasons where they get healthier. Outside of Adrian Peterson, you don't see that kind of rebound from major injuries. So you wonder if this is the beginning of the end of top-level productivity for Derrick Henry. And we know if he's not in the lineup, then that offense looks a little bit different and that passing game is not as efficient in taking advantage of shot plays down the field via play action. So that has to be a huge component. But I think the biggest anchor around this Titans team, Gojo, is that Ryan Tannehill contract. It's an albatross. Going into the tournament this year, you can make an argument that he was probably the second worst quarterback in the field behind Jimmy G. That's where we're at with Ryan Tannehill. He threw an interception on the first play of the game. He threw an interception on the first play coming out of the half. And he ended the game with an interception in effect. So looking at his contract, there really isn't much the Tennessee Titans can do about it. I mean, the guy's got a $38.6 million cap hit, but if you cut him, he's got a dead cap number of $57.4 million.
Oh, God.
So guess what? Ryan Tannehill is going to be your quarterback, Titans fans. He is going to be your guy. That Tannehill contract is the gift that keeps on giving. And so that's going to force you to make some really tough decisions, not only with guys like Harold Landry, but also with a guy like Taylor Lewan, who's got a $14 million cap hit, but he's got a $1 million dead cap number. That's $13 million in cap savings that they can find. And for a team that's slightly over the cap going into the offseason, they're going to have to make some tough decisions when it comes to their cornerstone pieces on that team.
Yeah, and Chris, that offensive line's an interesting place to look, because we're going to talk so much about Derrick Henry. He gets such an outsized amount of coverage, and deservedly so, because of what he's accomplished as a player. But that offensive line was not up to par against a battle we thought they were going to have an advantage in, right? The Bengals were shorthanded up front of the defensive line, banged up coming off the wild card round here, and that offensive line was not able to go out there and dominate in that way. We know Lewan's had battles with injury, and so you wonder if they start to turn over some of the pieces there and get a little bit younger on the line of the scrimmage in front and reset that, because again, because you've boxed yourself in at quarterback, you have got to make sure, kind of like we talked about with the Giants, you build the rest of that up to round to maximize. All right, we got to get holes for Derrick Henry and Donta Foreman if he's going to be there backing him up, whoever else will split carries, and then really have to lean in on that play action. And all of that requires an offensive line that's going to be out there consistently and dominating.
Well, I'm with you on that front. I think that the offensive line faced some unique challenges in that divisional round game, because the Cincinnati Bengals knew what time it was. They got the memo, Gojo. They lined up in a buddy front. Like I said, they had 2-3 techniques and a zero nose on that offensive line, along with two stack outside linebackers, and then you had the two inside linebackers and the safety drop down. It was a consistent 8-man front that Tennessee was trying to run against, but the only reason that Cincinnati was giving Tennessee those looks, not just because of Derrick Henry being back in the lineup, but also because they don't respect what Ryan Tannehill brings to the table, and for a good reason. Now, I don't want to bash Ryan Tannehill because he did make a big-time throw for a touchdown to A.J. Brown. That was a drop-it-in-the-bucket type of throw, an incredible one-handed catch by A.J. Brown. But it's too inconsistent with Tannehill, and that's why there's so much pressure on that Titans run game and that offensive line to deliver. And as they get older, I don't know that they're going to be as productive, as effective as they once were, especially with teams disrespecting the Titans passing game the way that the Cincinnati Bengals did.
Yeah, Chris, I think ultimately Ryan Tannehill chose a bad time to play his worst game of the season. He had played turnover-free football down the stretch. It's just going to be, can you get that to be more of the norm going forward? Or else once you get past this year when that dead cap number drops, then they're going to have some real decisions to make there. I know we didn't spend a ton of time on him, Chris. You and I both agree the Buffalo Bills a lot closer to all of this, right? This is going to be cosmetic stuff. Do you give some other interior defensive line help to a guy like Ed Oliver, who I thought played really well in that division around game? What do you do at slot as guys like Emmanuel Sanders age out? You talk about Cole Beasley, who could be a place you save money at in that passing game here. It's going to be small changes like that around a guy like Josh Allen, who's getting ready to supernova.
I think the biggest thing that the Buffalo Bills have to do is figure out who their offensive coordinator is going to be, because Brian Daboll will be the next coach of the New York Football Giants. And so I'm looking at Ken Dorsey as a guy that can step in and fill those shoes, somebody that's been hands-on with Brian Daboll in terms of understanding the offense. I think that would be a seamless fit in terms of having somebody to work with Josh, figuring out the plays, the concepts that he likes, and then being able to sequence the plays in order to take full advantage of what Josh in that skill position core is bringing to the table. I think that's the biggest decision that's facing the Buffalo Bills all offseason, because the defensive side of the ball, they've got some improvement to make. But those young pass rushers that they invested in over the last couple of years, those guys are going to continue to develop and step up and pay dividends. I'm talking about Boogie Basham. I'm talking about Greg Rousseau. I'm talking about A.J. Epenesa. Those guys will continue to get better and replace guys like Jerry Hughes and eventually Harrison Phillips. So I'm not too much worried about the pass rush being able to match the back end of that Buffalo Bills defense. I'm worried about what happens on the offensive end up in the play caller's booth with the offensive coordinator. I think that's the biggest thing that Sean McDermott has to figure out with this organization.
All right, we'll get to the NFC side of the losers from this past weekend and try and predict their future. But coming up next, Stephen A. Smith will remember someone that we lost 2 years ago today, the anniversary of the unfortunate passing of Kobe and Gigi Bryant, next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canny 99. And Gojo, I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that today is the 2-year anniversary of Kobe Bryant passing. And for me, as a diehard Lakers fan, it's still one of those things that doesn't seem real, because Kobe Bryant is this larger than life type figure, and things like this, like the tragedy that took place, don't happen to people like him. But unfortunately, the sports world lost a real one, and we also had a lot of other lives lost in that tragic accident a couple of years ago. And so I just wanted to hear your thoughts on Kobe Bryant and what his Mamba mentality means to you.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it there. It's been, like you said, when we heard 2 years this morning, it sort of jumped out at you because it both felt like yesterday and so many years ago. But the amazing part with Kobe and his effect on the sport, both on people still currently playing, everyone around it, is you still see him everywhere, right? The influence is felt everywhere. I mean, hell, Anthony Davis made his return back to the court last night and was wearing the Kobe Bryant Grinches, the shoes, the sneakers that Kobe had made so iconic. And so seeing all of those reminders around, it's been so strange because we're deprived of everything that Kobe Bryant was getting ready to start doing. His daughter Gigi, who was unfortunately lost in that accident, as well as the others that you mentioned, he was getting started on that portion of his life, getting to be a dad, getting to be a mentor to her as she grew up and the rest of his kids grew up and his family. So we were so deprived of seeing that portion of Kobe Bryant continue to grow post-playing career. But like so many with the legacy as a player, as someone who had an outsized influence on the sport, we see it around here every day. We see it around the sport every day. Stephen A. Smith, our very own, had a very poignant way he wanted to remember Kobe Bryant on this anniversary.
Where do I begin? The pain will not go away. It simply can't. For anyone who knew Kobe Bryant. It doesn't fade when seeing footage of one of his patented fallaway jump shots. It doesn't dissipate when we're reminded of the spectacular dunks and the championships that came along with them. It doesn't evaporate when we reminisce about one interview after another, allowing us to recall who the Black Mamba truly was. And it certainly hasn't disappeared now on the 2-year anniversary of Kobe Bryant's death. Yes, I have cried. 2 years since that fateful helicopter crash in Calabasas took Bryant from us all on January 26, 2020. My tears may never dry. 2 years since the same helicopter crash also took his beautiful 13-year-old daughter, Gianna, and 7 others with him. 2 years for all of us to mourn the passing of this spectacular 5-time champion, former league MVP, 15-time All-Star, and now, posthumously, this Hall of Famer.
You're an all-time great. I'm so proud of you. I love you forever and always. Kobe Bean Bryant.
So why does it still hurt so much? Perhaps it's because Kobe was the quintessential girl dad, leaving us to mourn not only the daughter he lost, but the 3 daughters he left behind, and Natalia, Bianca, and Capri. Maybe it's the aura he carried around, embellishing the Lakers for years in such a way that not only upheld a culture of accountability, but uplifted it. More likely, it's the fact that right now we're looking around for someone like him to keep folks focused on whatever task is at hand. Players missing games for reasons having nothing to do with injury? That was not Kobe Bryant. Players collecting paychecks without regards to regular season participation? That was not Kobe Bryant. Players prioritizing any and everything but championships? That was not Kobe Bryant. He was the marquee, and he lavished in it. He produced because he cared about production. He won because he abhorred losing. He was versatile and diverse because he was allergic to limitations. And he was a champion because he never cared to entertain those interested in limiting themselves.
If I had the power to turn back time, I would never use it. I think about it. Because then every moment that you go through means absolutely nothing, but you can always go back and do it again. When things are final, you know, moments won't ever come again.
That's why it still hurts that he's gone. But it'll always hurt. Because in Kobe Bryant, maybe a lot of folks saw what they could be, but everyone saw what they wanted to be. 2 years later, 2 years from now, and then some. Black Mamba, forever.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.